4. Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. It's time we bring in Cynthia Hoffswinder, who is at the Journal herself. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
And Janet Manko, who is at Janet Mankoville. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
Publisherville.
That's right, Publisherville. Publisherville.
Otherwise known as Lime Rock.
Yeah. That's right.
Right up the road from the office where I usually am.
All right. So we will go to the pages of the Lakeville Journal. And I saw this picture posted on Facebook, and it really is an amazing picture of the comet that was taken. Then you've got it right on the front page in color.
Right. Colleen Riley had sent it to us, and she had emailed it to us, and she posted, I think, one of her photos, but I think we have a very slightly different one. But it's amazing. It's a really cool comet. I think it's still... I can't completely remember if it's still visible.
It is still visible, and it's right by the Big Dipper. So if you look to the northwest, and it's higher now in the sky than it was when these pictures were taken.
And Ann Day also has some beautiful shots on her Instagram account.
But yeah, I saw one there too as well. Yeah, absolutely.
And we have a little item in the Compass page with a link to the Litchfield Hills Astronomy Club. So if you are excited by the comet, you can get in touch with these guys, and they have star gazing parties, and they'd be happy to help direct you on how to see cool stuff.
All right. Now, Patrick Sullivan did a great story on the river still dangerous and overcrowded, and we found out yesterday, once again, for the second time in 3.5 weeks, how dangerous the river is, even if it's low.
Especially if it's low. If you think it's going to be high like it was last time you came up and it's not as high, it's extra dangerous. And those rocks are still slippery, and there's still a lot of places to catch an ankle or slip and fall and get badly hurt in what looks like pretty tame water. But, you know, what's happening right now, and I know you've seen this too, is this is really turning into a bigger issue for people that's getting kind of ugly in an unfortunate way. And I'd say Litchfield County as a whole has been pretty welcoming to people throughout most of the quarantine. But there's a lot of, as always on social media, unpleasant conversation that's starting up. So that, for instance, on your post about the helicopter landing, some kind of pretty nasty comments about, you know, people coming up here and requiring aid. And then at the flip side of it, you have in Cornwall, patient Lindholm, who's posting on the Cornwall Network and saying, boy, these poor people who are stuck in these little apartments in the cities and it's so hot and they have no place to go, let's try to make them welcome. And you know what? If they leave a bunch of trash, I'm going to be out there cleaning it up after the weekend's over, and maybe eventually they'll learn that it's supposed to be left clean. So, you know, bless her. But the main thing that we are saying as a newspaper is the river is much more dangerous than it seems to be. There are additional complex issues of people coming there in large numbers, not wearing masks, leaving a lot of trash, cutting new trails through the woods. That's a separate issue, which is also problematic, but it's hitting all of the parks, all of the beaches around here, and the numbers were slightly lower over last weekend, but it's all anecdotal. It's really a question of who's out.
And they were up at Bass Fish.
Well, you know, you just hit exactly right. The numbers can be lower, but for someone who's not aware of the dangers of a river, or what happened across the line at the Taconic State Park this last weekend, 1,000 people showed up at Bashbish Falls.
Yeah,
they had to bring in the Taconic State Park police, regular police, and county police.
Federal agents. But the thing with Bashbish Falls, at least, is that's a park, and it's set up to be a park, and it's got a lot of parking for cars, and it's got well-defined trails down to the falls. And yet it's still dangerous, and when you have 1,000 people there in a fairly enclosed area and nobody's wearing a mask, it is dangerous. And we've done a pretty good job in the Northeast of keeping our COVID numbers down. But
When I post stories now about weekenders and the dangers that they face at our natural resources, I have turned off on my post commenting, because there's one particular site where the comments are just the most
vile
in the world. And this isn't about African Americans, Latinos, New Yorkers. It's about people who are unfamiliar with our area. Right. Anybody who might be unfamiliar with our area that comes here. And that's what it's about. It's not about anything else. It's about their unfamiliarity. Yes, the trash and the ruining and making your own trails, that's something totally different. But we don't want to see people die in our area when they come up here to enjoy our area.
For a day trip.
It's very challenging for our volunteer ambulance and fire companies who are out there on the river doing these rescues. And, of course, it's what they want to do. They would never for a minute say they resent it. But, you know, as with hiking on the trails, which, you know, every 5 years somebody gets into a very bad dust-up on the trails if they're hiking at the wrong time of year or are doing something that is off the trail or dangerous, there's a lot less, even though there's a super abundance of people on the trails right now, we haven't really got the same kind of issues of people getting into hikers. For the most part, tend to be competent at hiking, but there are a lot of people here who don't know how to swim, who are bringing small children into that water, turning their backs on them, and it's much more dangerous than it looks.
Absolutely. Now, another story that Patrick has on the front page is Region 1 has put their plans together and sent it off to the state, along with every other region in the state of Connecticut. The Department of Education will look at all these plans and then kick back what their plans are. And Cynthia, this is such a big story that people should follow, because the cost to the individual school districts is going to be almost insurmountable. And there's got to be a way for the state to get recoup from the federal government and the local governments recoup from the state, because there's just going to be so many different things that are going to be required of school districts.
And, of course, a lot of the towns have been voting their budgets in maybe a little bit later than usual. And all of these towns are required by the government to have like a 10% rainy day fund or a general fund that they keep. But it's still going to really scrape the bottom, and I think we're all going to be looking at higher taxes next year. But each of the school districts met with Lisa Carter, our interim superintendent, this week. I think Cornwall might have been the last. They met last night. Each school is going to have its own slightly different protocols, but Lisa Carter has outlined a general protocol. Yeah. I believe that all of the towns accepted the plan that was presented to them, but they're each going to, you know, have different things they're doing. Cohorting is going to be a big part of it, so that essentially you're creating a family unit within the school so that you have the same bunch of kids moving around from class to class, activity to activity. A lot of the schools are seeing interest in enrollment, but I think with all of these things, we're not really going to know until school starts. And in terms of enrollment, we're not going to know until the official day that enrollment is counted, which is October 1st.
Yes.
But I would say, on average, what we're hearing from the schools is, you know, maybe 7 to 10 people have called the schools and said, we'd like to come. But when you've got a graduating class of between 8 and 15 kids at some of these small schools, 7 is a lot.
Yeah,
and but that also, can be good. Like, they all want more kids, which is great.
And also, the school districts are really at the mercy of the state now, because the state takes all this data in that Lisa Carter sent to them. And then they try to put together a cohesive plan that they can send out, once again, saying, okay, this is what we think of your plan, and go ahead with it, or else make changes to it. So,
to their credit, sort of saying, like, each of you school districts and each of you schools, you know what's going on in your town. We're going to try not to do a top-down approach, which I think is admirable, and it's moving pretty quickly and efficiently, it seems like.
All right. The state has a special session, and there's really four main topics that the session hopes to deal with.
And two, of course, are topics that we're hearing a lot about. One is police accountability. Another one is the absentee ballot voting. If you're voting in the August primary, and let's all remember that this August is the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, if you're planning to vote in the primary, which I think is August 11th, you should already have your absentee ballot application. And I had said to my daughter, who was thinking about filling it out, it's like, well, you know, it's if you can go, she's in good health and able, you should just go to town hall, because historically the absentee ballots are counted last. So what they're looking at now is making sure that every absentee ballot is counted for the November election. And what a lot of towns are saying is, we prefer it if you get that absentee ballot. And, of course, there's a lot of conversation going on about, you know, whether this is legal or not. The Attorney General is in the middle of a legal fight over it. It's a very complicated issue, but we will keep an eye on what they end up doing in Hartford.
All right, COVID-19 numbers in Connecticut, we're still keeping it's extremely low. It goes up a little bit every now and then, but the infection rate is now at 1.4%, I think, which is well below what has been established. But this is something that we are watching here closely, but we're also watching it in conjunction with what's going on in the rest of the country.
Right, where so much of the country is spiking now, at a rate where we had been a few months ago as a region. And I would say Litchfield County, generally pretty low numbers. We were prepared, I'm proud of our state to say, and didn't really need a lot of the preparation that we had. But of course, that doesn't mean that we should stop paying attention. And of course, Governor Lamont has announced this week, in partnership with New York and New Jersey's governors, they're really locking down in the quarantine. They're going to start checking in with people as they get off airplanes or trains or buses. In terms of cars driving in, of course, you know, you can't stop every car on the road, but they are going to have troopers at highway rest stops. And if you're driving into Connecticut from one of the southern states or the more impacted states, of course, at some point you're going to need to get gas. So I would imagine that it's going to be a huge snarl at these rest stops. And as always, I think if you don't need to travel, this is probably a good time to not travel.
All right. Move inside here. You've got a story, Cynthia. The hows and whys of area automobile thefts, as we were informed by Troop B Police a couple of weeks ago, that you know, this is on the rise in our area.
We done a story months ago, and I got teased about it a lot, but people really forget they can't leave their keys in their car and leave their car in the driveway or at the gas station with the car running with your wallet in the front seat. This is something that we always forget around here, is that it's not just us. Who are here, there are, you know, people coming in and out from outside the region, and of course now more than ever there's a lot of people coming in and out. So the state police had sent out a study that they started in February of car theft in the state of Connecticut, and it's really interesting, and I had been planning to do something with it, and then John Harney Jr. For his column had talked about how his car was stolen from his driveway in a fairly remote section of Salisbury, and of course it's listed in the police blotter. So I did a summary of what the state police said, and it's really fascinating. It's not, as they said, bored teenagers driving around and joyriding. It's really organized gangs of thieves coming up from the cities and going house to house and checking whether there's a car, whether there's a laptop, whether there are, inconceivable to me, if you leave your firearms in the front seat, I guess people do that. So really good tips. I strongly recommend people read that article.
Now, the humorist in me figures these thieves are coming up from the city, and they're sunbathing and using our parks during the day and then stealing cars
at
night.
Well, apparently what they do is they come in early in the morning before sunrise, and they do a sweep of neighborhoods. It's like they come up with like six of them, and, you know, six of them come in one car, probably without masks, and then they drive back in these cars, and then they rent out these cars for other thefts or for human trafficking or for drug dealing. It's pretty chilling.
Now, Alan Hawkins has an interesting story out of Sharon that we covered a little earlier on, and that is better access or expanded access to land records was approved in Sharon.
In here in the northwest corner, real estate is a little bit like the movie industry is to Hollywood. It's really one of the big businesses. There's a lot of real estate being turned, especially now, and especially in Salisbury and Sharon, and the town halls are closed, and it's very hard for the attorneys to get in and do the searches that they need to do on the history of a property and what the boundaries are and whether there are liens on it, et cetera, because the town halls are closed. They can get in, they can do some research, but a lot of real estate documentation is now online for a lot of the towns, and Sharon is one of those towns. But not all of them have been digitized yet and are not all available. And so an attorney had come to Linda Amerigi, the town clerk, and said, boy, it'd be sure great if you could continue, you know, if you could do a big push to get this chunk of land records digitized and online. So that is now happening.
All right. And the racist graffiti in Falls Village, once again, it's things like this popping up everywhere.
Yeah, you know, it's really been a very ugly summer, and a lot of people I know in the last couple of weeks, people who I like are sort of saying, like, oh, you know, maybe Trump's not so bad. And, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but I do feel like there's a lot more people taking a strong stand one way or the other on some of the events of the summer, and it's really bubbling over in an ugly way. So there was some anti-Black Lives Matter graffiti sprayed on a road. Town crew members saw it. They had it cleaned up in a couple of hours. But, of course, this is, you know, I think most towns already feel like it's their policy to be against racist graffiti, but the town did stand up and say, this is not okay.
All right. Chiropractic office opened at Studio Lakeville.
Yeah, Studio Lakeville's open, and I've taken a class there. It's pretty big and open and clean. And, of course, it's the former firehouse in Lakeville, and they've got a lot of space there. And there's now a chiropractic office, a very chipper, lovely young guy named Tyler Van Steenbergen with a dog named River. and he's doing chiropractic. And boy, if you've been sitting at a desk and stressed out the last couple of weeks, you're going to be happy to have somebody work on your back. And he is doing appointments now during COVID.
All right. I want to move along to just for a moment to the opinion and viewpoint pages. The editorial, Janet, Police Accountability Bill should become law. And this is going to be another one of these news stories and items that is going to become extremely political this time of year.
Well, it is political, and this is why our legislators are addressing it, and I give them credit for coming back to do this, in addition to the three things they're taking on. But, you know, this bill is not defunding the police, in case anybody's thinking that, because that word is getting thrown around so much. It's aimed at changing the culture of policing, and that's a benefit not only to the public, but to the police themselves. We have many very professional, good police officers who want to do their jobs well and want to be accountable for their actions and those of their colleagues, and this will make that a clearer path. It includes bans on chokeholds, a requirement for wearing body cameras, a change in qualified immunity, and a mandate for the public release of complaints against the police right from the beginning. So they don't have to wait to find out if they're legitimate complaints or not. They just put them out. And the thing about that is that it helps us see what our police deal with on a day-to-day basis. And they need to deal with all these things, and we should know what's going on. More transparency is the goal, and that this bill does manage to increase transparency. So we hope it does pass, and it may look a bit different from the way it looks now. That's okay.
And once again, I found it, your letters to the editor in the eye of the beholder, Peter Steiner, once again, more commentary about I think people lose sight of what a political or what a cartoonist job is in a paper.
Well, I think that actually Peter Steiner does his job very well,
yeah.
And that's why we do get reactions to his cartoons, and we're glad about that. We like, you know, if this is the way we got the conversation going, that's good, and we're happy to have these letters on our, we have a lot of letters this week, all different topics, and the one you mentioned, it's in the eye of the beholder, is from Peter Chiesa in Kent, who actually used to write a conservative column for us, so we're happy to see him pop up again and talk about how unfunny and boring and vapid our paper is, but you know what, that's good, he's reading it and sharing his opinion, and that's what we like, and we have yeah, Peter's cartoon this week is about our president wearing a mask, so don't miss that one. It's really fascinating.
And your guest commentary, video, the instrument of systemic change.
Yeah, this is from Catherine Tatke and Dominique Lesueur. So many of our readers are familiar with them as the co-founders of the Civic Life Project. And they talk about 10 years of what they've been doing and how they've grown and learned and all the students and young adults they have influenced and have influenced them. It's really a great read. Don't miss it.
And Lisa Wright has, but then again, Defend, Defund, or Disarm, which you were talking a little bit about earlier.
That's right, and she's talking about police forces across the country and what some are doing in order to solve problems of inequality, and I'm sure if you give her column a read, you will find you agree or disagree with her, and we'll take both sides in the letters.
Now, Cynthia, Tangled Lines with Patrick Sullivan about which rod to use when. It's got me all confused because I just always thought you had a fishing rod, you went out and went fishing.
Yeah, I think that actually, this is an old-fashioned rod in the sense it doesn't have a reel on it. It's just you and the stick and the string and the fish. But learn more about it in his column. And, of course, John Hardy, when his car was stolen, one of the things he was saddest about was his fishing rod was in there. So Patrick has set him up. Everybody will be happy to know. And then we have Compass this week is a little earlier in the paper than it normally is. And we have an article about Arrowhead, which was Herman Melville's house up in Pittsfield, which I hadn't realized was up there. So a perfect time of year to take a nice drive to walk around the grounds there. And they are open for limited tours. And you can think about cool waves in the ocean. And then we have a little sidebar on some really good road food stops that you can do if you are doing a day trip up into the Berkshires. We start down in Kent. We go all the way up to Stockbridge, I think. And then the Berkshire Film Festival is screening online some really interesting movies, including one about a favorite topic of mine and Janet's, which is the Donut Dollies, who are women and sometimes men who come to, they're like USO, except they don't dance. They just come and offer comfort to soldiers, which is kind of a beautiful thing. So Norm Anderson did a film about donut dollies for the Vietnam War. There's also a film about the Chinese dissident artist Ai Weiwei, who has been up here quite a bit, was considering buying some property, and also Echo in the Canyon, which was a movie that was at the movie house a while ago, and they're rescreening that. And we have information on that astronomy club, so if you are excited by the comet NEOWISE, you can find out about newer and older celestial sightings and how to join in on their meetings and their stargazing parties.
And what I'm noticing here at the station, and what I've now noticed in your compass section, is the area is starting to awake from its slumber. I mean, there are various events like the Berkshire International Film Festival going virtual, Sharon Playhouse, what they did just a couple of weeks ago over the past two times, what's happening up at Barrington, in Great Barrington, Mahewi showing outdoor theaters, outdoor movies in cooperation. So, and just recently, last night, in Egremont, which they gave permission to the barn to have concerts there outdoors. And it was a unanimous decision by planning and zoning to allow it to happen as we try to basically come out of our slumber from the past 6 months.
It's a little bit of energy. Can't hurt.
Yeah, and I'd love to say that in Compass 2, we have a special banner from the Canaans, North Canaan, East Canaan, Falls Village. Usually at this time of the year, we'd be having railroad days in Canaan. And there are businesses open there, and they are promoting themselves in this banner to let people know, listen, this is the time to support those businesses that are open and are here for you. They're part of the community. Please support all of the advertisers in our paper. You're right. They are growing now, and they are trying to let people know, come out. We are doing things responsibly. Socially distancing, wearing face coverings, and being careful, but open for business.
There's so many things that we've taken for granted now that we're missing. Like today, this week would have been the opening of the Olympics in Japan. I mentioned that earlier. But there's so many other things we have missed that it's nice that we're finally starting to come out of it. And I know you as a paper and we as a radio station are urging people, yes, you know, there's concerts in Sharon that they're having now. But when you come out, you know, have your mask with you in case you need it and socially distance. And you can still go out and lead. Get back into a fairly normal life, and as the Lakeville Journal knows and as Robin Hood Radio knows, we need our businesses around, because if our businesses aren't around, you're not going to have any media around.
No media and not much of a fabric of a community. You know, don't miss our Tri-Corner Real Estate this week. As Cynthia mentioned, the realtors have been busy all along, but there's still enough going on in the area to really fill a healthy Tri-Corner Real Estate. Take a look, see what's happening in the area. There are things that are active and getting more active, and we need to take advantage of it while it's happening.
All right. We'll speak to you both next week. Have a safe week.
You too.
You too. Thanks so much.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal, tricornernews.com on the web.